He said, we all have to lie for the greater good. They actually believed that this was such an existential threat that saving the planet, if you're going to save the planet, then indeed it was, you know, you did have to lie for the greater good. And I'm very, very uncomfortable about that.
I'm here at the Better Way Conference with Norman Fenton for the first time speaking together in person. If you've watched the Pandemic podcast, we've had Norman on twice now to look at some of the challenges with the COVID data. But here at the Better Way, you're at the climate panel this time, looking at some of the climate issues. Are we seeing some of the same challenges with the climate-related data as we've seen with the COVID data? Tell us a little bit about what...
Yeah, so I'm certainly not a climate scientist, but I do have some insights because of some actually documentary work that I've done with a major national broadcaster. But what I can tell you is that the same kind of manipulated data and flawed kind of like statistical mathematical models, especially in these sort of simulation models that they use in climate change, a lot of them are kind of like fundamentally flawed based on kind of like ludicrous and simplistic assumptions, much like they did with the COVID data prediction. So similar kinds of problems there, and also very similar kinds of problems with the censorship of dissenting voices, those who are kind of like pointing out these kinds of issues. And that type of censorship means that, you know, the public never get to hear the alternatives. So this idea that, you know, 98% of all climate scientists agree about the, you know, the theory of the hypothesis of anthropogenic warming, that must be true. So you've got those same kinds of issues, exactly the same with COVID and censorship of any dissenting voices.
Yeah, so what was your experience working in the field in the time that you did? Was there a push to provide certain storylines or?
Yeah, so I did a documentary with a sort of national public broadcaster. They wanted three mathematicians who hadn't been working in climate science to kind of like explain the mathematics around, you know, the climate science numbers. My two co-presenters went on to become, let's say, pretty stellar celebrity scientists presenting documentaries now on behalf of that national public broadcaster. But that was my first and last TV career move, let's say, because I actually was very concerned about the way that documentary was edited and presented. I mean, it was fantastically produced and it won kind of lots of awards and international awards, but a lot of the stuff in it was based on, say, sort of these, a lot of kind of like flawed narrative and a very biased narrative. And in particular, the reason, yeah, why I guess I was never invited back on was because I actually made a formal complaint about the program, which arose because I'd been scripted to say, to make certain claims about these climate change numbers by their academic consultants, the guys who really were doing these detailed models, okay? And I felt a bit uncomfortable during the, you know, when we were screening, when we were filming that program, that some of the claims didn't feel right to me. I mean, I wasn't sufficiently expert in the kind of modeling they were doing, but something didn't feel right. And I spoke to the guy and he said, no, it's absolutely fine. You know, don't worry. What I'm telling you to say, it's absolutely fine. Well, after the program went out, I found out that the same professor had written one of his recent research papers was effectively saying something which kind of like directly contradicted the claim that on his behalf that I was kind of like saying. And so I actually phoned the guy up. I said, look, you told me that it was okay to make this statement, right? And I'm looking at this paper of yours now, and actually it sort of contradicts what he said I should say. He said, we all have to lie for the greater good. And I was really shocked about this, but I was equally shocked because I actually told, when I recounted this story to fellow academics, who I actually thought might be slightly sympathetic to the idea that this wasn't the right thing to be doing, they actually said, oh no, it's so important that is, we do, it's right for this thing. It's like, they really do believe this existential, I mean, I think it's a massively exaggerated threat, and I don't think it's, you know, there's not much humans can do about it anyway, but that's a separate thing. But they actually believed that this was such an existential threat that saving the planet, you're going to save the planet, then indeed it was, you know, you did have to lie for the greater good. And I'm very, very uncomfortable about that. And I actually think that a lot of the sort of the COVID, you know, the sort of, I call the sort of the COVIDians, actually also, I think they were also doing it from a belief that they were actually, you know, it wasn't, there was no evil intent. I think that they also believed that sometimes they had to lie for the greater good to save the planet. So a similar type of, yeah, similar type of thinking there.
Yeah, and there's a very popular book called How to Lie with Statistics.
Yeah,
I mean, we've seen the impact of that, and that's why I was curious to ask, and you know, how you shared that story here at the Better Way conference. But you also, prior to the conference, you'd shared some information from one of the key reports in this field that essentially went viral on Twitter. Mm. What was that report, and what was some of the warning signs that caused you to share that?
Yeah, so the government funded, with quite a lot of funding, I think it was over £6 million, a consortium of kind of like climate academic experts and energy experts from top universities, Oxford, Cambridge, Imperial, and a few others, to basically plan, identify an appropriate plan for the net zero, the 2050 net zero targets. And this group, and actually this was, it's not even particularly new. I think it was founded, the consortium was founded in 2019. I think at the end of 2020, it's actually, or 2021, but certainly more than 2 years ago, they published a report which was called Absolute Zero. And what they were saying was that because the technology for carbon capture and removal was never going to be sufficiently advanced, and because we also, the technology for non-fossil fuel mass transportation systems and manufacturing was also never going to be sufficiently advanced, that the only way to achieve net zero, net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050, was to get to what they called absolute zero. And in their report, I say, which was published more than 2 years ago, they actually made very clear what they believed needed to be done to meet this absolute zero target. And it included things like almost all UK airports to close by 2030, and by 2050, no airports at all, no shipping at all until 2050. They also said, of course, no petrol or diesel cars after 2030. And as far as all transport, all energy consumption, all food consumption, all of those things had to be reduced to 60% of today's level by 2050. And of course, what this actually means is that that you're either going to have a really, really a much colder, hungrier, miserable population of the world, or the only way you can achieve those targets is by depopulation. So I thought this was quite frightening, and that this report, this was all presented at the House of Lords, and actually, the other thing was, of course, absolutely no beef or lamb consumption by 2050. And of course, what we're seeing gradually is a lot of these things are actually being put into place. You know, they might, you know, people might say, but it's not an official government report. It was only funded by the government, and the net zero plans are not the same as the absolute zero plans. But actually, in reality, all of these things that they're saying are actually being gradually implemented. It's there. You know, you've got it with the 15-minute cities. You've got it with the moves against farming and agriculture, the reduction of, they're trying to stop people eating meat completely, all of these things, moving towards insect food, all that sort of nonsense. So it kind of like, to me, that it worryingly is, even if they say it's not, that is basically what's happening. And I find that very, very disconcerting.
Yeah, Norman, both of these subjects, you know, what you've shared here are very complex and nuanced. I'd love to have more time to examine these further with you. But I think these are warning signs that we're seeing, and it's important now in the context of what we're talking about here at The Better Way, how we find a better way forward. What's your overall take on, when it comes to your professional field, you spent best part of your career looking at some of these different modeling techniques and data analysis. How can we actually move forward in a more effective way to actually have that pursuit of truth that Matthias Desmet was talking about here?
It's a very good and challenging question, because we've tried. I mean, the only way you're going to basically get this message out is to penetrate through that incredible mainstream censorship that exists. It's not when I say mainstream censorship, it's the problem is that the academic institutions, as well as the mainstream media, are kind of like captured by, let's say, people who believe very strongly in this narrative and are very reluctant, as I'd said from the start, to hear these alternative voices. It's almost like we have to have kind of like alternative. We have to, because people talk about, oh, peer-reviewed papers. Well, we can't, you know, I've had over 300 peer-reviewed papers before COVID. I have seven books, but none of the stuff we're doing on this can even get to peer review. We can't even get it into the sort of the preprint servers that where you're supposed to be able to load anything. So we've got to set up alternative, you know, basically alternative mechanisms for getting these messages out. And that's a big challenge. But, you know, with, you know, people like yourself and with these sort of conferences, hopefully we are reaching a broader audience, because the more you can, you know, I think there are a lot of people who want to be woken up, right, but haven't got the information, you know, necessary to fully wake them up and then to wake other people up. So hopefully this is, you know, this is a way forward.
Thank you, Norman. It's a real pleasure to see you here in person at the Better Way Conference here in Bath. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.